You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
He is the great Jim Ross. He is, of course, from AEW Wrestling Now. He's got the new book out, Under the Black Hat, My Life in the WWE and Beyond. JR, great to hear from you again. First of all, trust that you and all of yours are healthy and safe right now.
We are doing well, Chris. It's great to hear your voice, and thanks for having me on, buddy.
No, appreciate it, JR. Thank you as always. And, you know, this one comes following up Slobberknocker. That was a tremendous book and very successful. So why write the second book with Under the Black Hat?
My story was unfinished. I stopped the Slobberknocker when Austin beat Shawn Michaels with Mike Tyson involved at WrestleMania 15, I think it was. And there was a lot more story to tell. And then I had significant life changes. Which, obviously, speaking of my late wife getting killed in March of 17, and she was riding her little scooter home from the gym, a kid lives who was on his phone and ran over the top of her, and she never regained consciousness. So I had a hell of a lot more to talk about. And I felt like it was time to honor her memory, because we alpha males sometimes, Chris, I'm not saying you have this issue, but I've had it for a long time, unfortunately, where your ego gets a little bit out of control, and you forget who helped get you there. And when I look back at all the things she helped me through, you know, she was a great coach's wife. Well, I had a talent that had problems or was unhappy. They came to my house. She fed them dinner. We talked. We sat and had a little family environment. And then it was especially that way when the talent's wives and my wife. She was that conduit. So it was an unfinished story. And it took me right up to leaving WWE in 2019, and then signing with Tony Khan and AEW soon thereafter.
Yeah, JR, none of us can imagine ever having to go through that, but going through it in the public eye, how did you cope with her loss?
Not well, to be honest with you. Not well at all. I kind of retreated from my normal personality. I didn't get out to leave the house very often. One thing that really struck me, I put my wristwatch on, and I noticed that it was like a month off. So I hadn't even worn my watch in a month. I don't know when I shaved last. I looked like Howard Hughes or some damn body, you know. It wasn't me. And so I realized that's not what she would have wanted. I'm going to finish this book. We're going to write a great book, and I think we have, because it really told her story. It's not just a wrestling book. It's about relationships and how important that unit is with your significant other, and never take anybody for granted. And gosh almighty, especially in this day and time.
No question, JR. And it's, of course, Jim Ross, the legendary wrestling announcer with us with his new book out, Under the Black Hat, My Life in the WWE and Beyond. How are you dealing with all of this right now? Because I know AEW is like WWE. They're still going at it down in Florida right now, right?
Yeah, we're a close set. Everybody on the set, all the workers, all the production people, all the talents, we've all been tested. I'll be tested twice this week, which I don't mind. Everybody that comes through the gate to come to work has their temperature checked and has blood work done. And so we're trying to be as careful as we can. We're trying to observe a social distancing, but it's not easy. It's not easy at all, but it's not having a crowd, not having people in the stands is daunting. But as a broadcaster, you just keep your eyes on the damn monitor, call what you see, and try to give it enough emotion that you're not overselling it, but you're still having fun and trying to bring some verbal excitement to the viewer.
Logistically, how are you doing it? Are you doing it from a different room, or are you still ringside but just far enough apart from somebody else?
The situation we have here in Jacksonville, where I am now, and I'm here all month. I took one flight in from Oklahoma, and unfortunately, my grandchildren lost their other grandfather due to the virus on Easter Sunday.
Oh, wow.
So grandpa leaving Oklahoma, good old JR leaving Oklahoma and coming to Florida to work was not the most popular decision. I'm going to really come through big time at Christmas, I guess, but they're not happy with Dad right now and grandpa. But we're dealing with it. There's nothing, you know, I'm stuttering around here. When you can't solve a problem, you shouldn't invest a hell of a lot of time in it. I things that you can't correct, you can't fix. and we can't fix this. All we can do is adhere to the rules. That's what we're trying to do. Hey, I went to the UFC fight on Saturday night as Dana White's guest, and I watched their procedure. They're just like us. Everybody was wearing a mask. I'm not going to wear a mask when I broadcast, obviously, because I'm hard to understand enough without putting a mask on. But we'll be at our, we're not at ringside. We're in an amphitheater. And so we're up on the stage of the amphitheater, and the ring is down like the on the floor level. So we're way away from the ring, and we're kind of isolating our own little area. So it's different. But, you know, if you're a pro and you're paid and you accept the money, go do the job. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to do our job, entertain the fans, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of that.
JR with us, the great Jim Ross. All right, now, as far as kind of the you talked about the logistics of how they're testing everybody and all that. That's what we're talking about with all major sports right now, right? So what have you seen and or learned that you would pass along to the likes of, you know, baseball and football and basketball, all of whom are considering and trying to work out ways here to play without fans?
Well, the masks are imperative. The social distancing is imperative. You know, one thing that's a simple illustration to answer your question is the catering. There's no salad bar. They got a little menu on a dry erase board. You tell them what you want, the meatloaf or the chicken or whatever, and they hand you your order in little individual containers. So there's no buffet. There's no salad bar. It's just a whole different ball game, and everybody is encouraged to not congregate. So, and I think our guys have done a pretty good job of that. You know, the Daly's place is adjacent. It's attached to the stadium the Jaguars play in. The Khan family, who owns AEW, own the Jaguars, so we have a leg up on that facility. So I kind of think that's where we're going to be for a while, quite frankly, Chris.
Now, JR, when you're with a group like AEW, look, everybody's going to take their financial hits. How have they been able to handle it from a business standpoint?
We've been very fortunate that TNT has great confidence in our program, ratings-wise. As a matter of fact, in the 18 to 49 demo last week, we outranked Monday Night Raw in New York. So we're getting an audience. And people are starting to find us. They want an alternative. They want something different, and we offer something different. So, but it's the brand is growing, but the virus hasn't helped us. It hasn't helped anybody, you know, the poor independent business owners. But the thing about our company is that TNT gave us a 3-year contract extension for a whole lot of money that's keeping the company rolling right along right now. So we manage. Tony Khan manages his costs well, and he's a good manager. So. We're not, our payroll's not inflated. We don't have guys who are getting paid not doing anything. So we're having fun with it. We're enjoying it, and it's a new lease on life for me, Chris. You know how things go. You change jobs, you move here, you move there. We're all this whole guys just looking for another opportunity to do what we do, what we love to do, and that's what I've been given that opportunity to go do what I'd like to do. I was put here to do, and thank God I'm still on a team and playing.
Jim Ross with us. He's got the new book out, Under the Black Hat, My Life in the WWE and Beyond. And, you know, that kind of leads me to my next question, JR. You're a voice of more than a generation of wrestling fans. Your voice is more identifiable with the sports entertainment than any other, perhaps. So how do you approach your responsibility in being that? I mean, do you realize the impact that you've had?
Oh, probably not, Chris. Hell, I'm just a country boy. You know, I'm one of those all shucks guys. You know, my favorite baseball player growing up, because he went to New York, was Mickey Mantle. He's, you know, he and I grew up about 60 miles apart. They say you should never meet your heroes. I did. Some days I regret meeting Mickey. Some days I don't. But he's still my hero. And I'm lucky to be where I am. I'm blessed. You know, I grew up on a 160-acre farm, an only child. You know, we didn't have an indoor bathroom until I was in the fourth grade. This is like it's like one of Toby Keith's country songs, my buddy from Oklahoma, but it's the truth. So I'm blessed to be where I am. I know that people expect a lot out of me. I know that there's a younger generation that feel, well, maybe JR's time has come and gone, and I don't believe that. I won't let myself believe that. And what I do to survive, Chris, is real simple. I refuse to hang around and loiter in my comfort zone. When we stay in our comfort zone too damn long, man, you don't grow anymore. And when you stop growing, you start dying. So I always try to get better. I want to be really good Wednesday night on TNT, and I want to kick some ass on pay-per-view on Saturday night. That's my mindset, and that's my mindset as a broadcaster and a competitive person.
JR with us. You know, it's amazing. How much are you involved, JR, and I apologize for not knowing. Are you as involved on the creative side with the AEW folks as you were at one point with the WWE?
No, and that's by purpose. It's intentional. My title is senior advisor, Chris. I'm senior advisor to Tony Khan. And the other day I was talking to him. I said, you know what my title even means with UFC fights? He said, well, not really. I said, it means that I can take credit for all the good stuff and disavow any knowledge of the things that suck. He laughed. So I do give them ideas on how to enhance a talent. They establish a direction. I sometimes help them along the way with little suggestions here, there, and yon. Some small thing, you know, trying to go back to the retro a little bit. I suggest that we have time limits. WWE doesn't use time limits. I don't know how you have a sporting event with no time limit, if you want to believe it's a sporting event, or if it's just Broadway to say this act will be over in 10 minutes. I don't know what you do. So we have time limits, little things like that that make us old school and understandable in that regard. But I'm having a blast. I really am. When you're sitting at home, you lost your wife. Hell, man, 4 days after my wife got killed, our damn cat died. And then I got signed to a 2-year deal with WWE. And that was my final contract. And when my contract ended in March of 19, you know, Vince McMahon and I, it was just a mutual thing. Vince, let's not even talk about renegotiating. I'm done. I want to play. I don't want to be that old quarterback with a pouchy stomach that's on the sideline with a visor carrying a clipboard. I want to play. And Tony Khan gave me a chance to get a uniform back and play. And that's what I'm doing now.
I can't even imagine what you're thinking about in terms of Oklahoma football. You're the biggest Oklahoma football fan that there is. And, you know, I can't imagine what it's like in Norman right now with the possibility of what lies ahead with the virus and how it's going to affect college football, JR.
Well, you know, it's obvious that a lot of people say that if there's no students on campus, there's not going to be any football. And I saw today where Notre Dame's going to have their students come back August 1st. Oklahoma's got a date. I think they got a date, a tentative date. Everything's tentative. But, you know, football drives that university. The football drives Norman, Oklahoma. That's where I live. It's a college football town. Yes, we have baseball and softball and basketball, all the other stuff. We've got everything. But football is the bell cow. Football pays all the bills. And so they're, I'm anxious to see how that works out. We need sports. We need football. We need baseball. We need basketball. But how do we get there? We all know we need it. How do we facilitate it? And for that, unfortunately, I don't have those answers, Chris. I don't know that anybody has those exact answers.
Yeah, I don't think any of us do right now. All we can do is listen to the medical professionals, right? I mean, you just keep trying to do that. JR, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about some of the old times. And, you know, as a fan growing up, when you were involved with the creative storyline part of WWE and all that, was there ever one that you vehemently disagreed with? Like, we shouldn't be doing this storyline.
Yeah, I would say when Triple H got into the coffin with a corpse, that was a little bit crazy. When Mark Henry gave birth to, or Mae Young gave birth to Mark Henry's hand, I didn't understand that story. How do you sell that? I mean, I got a good imagination, Chris, but God almighty, man. That stretches the bounds of any kind of sanity. It's better just to lay out and let it play out.
All right. You got to take us behind the scenes, and I know the question's been asked a million times. Who knew what at the Montreal Screwjob?
Oh, gosh. You know, there's a small group. Vince had, I think, had a few people, Pat Patterson, Jerry Briscoe. I think Bruce Pritchard knew. I did not know, and it pissed me off. Because I was the executive vice president of the talent department, and my department was in charge of scouting and evaluating and signing and all that good stuff, managing the roster, and it's just hard to explain all that. And I go to Vince and, you know, why didn't you tell me we were going to do something like this? He said, because I had to protect you, because if the talent knew that you were in on it, they would never trust you again. So my question to him back was, well, do you think they're going to trust you? And that didn't get an amazing answer. Vince did what he thought he had to do, but I was not in on it. And when it happened, Terry Lawler and I were sitting there like, we were like two green guys. What's going on here? So we thought it was going to be a disqualification. Sean wins by the hook or crook deal, and all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. But I was very embarrassed to my roster. But Vince told him. JR did not know about this, so don't hold this against him. So I became more of a confidant to the talent. I think it helped my relationships to communicate, because the guys knew I was a player's coach. I'm in their corner. I negotiated your deal. I helped you get your start, whatever it may be, and I'm here for you. Barry Switzer told me one time, Chris, over a few hundred beers, it seemed like, that when you recruit a player, you're recruiting for life. And I never knew what he meant by that until I had dinner with him one night, and he his phone kept ringing. And it was all these players on the line that I knew, I'd heard of. They're famous. And one needed some rent money, one needed a car payment, one needed a bed, one needed his cable turned on. I mean, he was like, he's their go-to. And I said, Coach, how long do you expect to take care of these kids? He said, as long as I'm alive. Because when you recruit somebody, JR, you recruit them for life. And I kind of have taken on that mantra that was kind of my theory. And that's why I've got such a great relationship with Dwayne Johnson, who I signed, and John Cena and Brock Lesnar and all these kids, Steve Austin, for God's sakes. So it was a really unique experience. I always wanted to be a coach, and that probably was the closest thing that I got to doing that WWE roster. And maybe someday I'll be more involved in talent here. Who knows? But right now I'm the oldest guy on the team. I get at least kids. So you're the voice of my childhood. I've always dreamed you calling one of my matches. All those great things you love to hear, but I take that very personally. I want those kids to do great. I want them to make money and provide for their families. That's what I want them to do. And if there's a way I can help them better down the road, that's what we're probably going to explore.
How much do you love the fact, JR, that whenever there's a massive hit or ever there's something crazy that goes on, now your play-by-play is immediately added to whatever it is?
It's amazing, isn't it? I told somebody the other day in a tongue-in-cheek way, I wish there was a way to monetize that stuff, because it's everywhere. the first one I remember was, remember that hit when Jadeveon Clowney was a senior?
Oh, yeah, against Michigan in the bowl game, yep.
Yeah, he destroyed a guy. And so there's the first time that those sound bites are put there, and now they're everywhere. In boxing, MMA, football, fat people falling, whatever it may be. I'm everywhere. So somebody sent me a clip about 3 years ago after all this started, and they had my voice dubbed, one of my calls dubbed, over a Jamaican porn movie.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, hey, honey, God. My wife is alive. I said, honey, listen to this. She was humiliated. So obviously that was deleted. And I said, yeah. So anyways, you never know, man. People's imagination these days with social media and the things people can do on their damn phones is absolutely amazing.
Next time, the first time you yelled, by God, it should have been with trademark right afterwards.
Bingo. Exactly.
All right, JR, give me just a couple. And I know it's impossible to pick one. So just give me the biggest moments / memories that really stand out for you that you're like, wow, I got to be a part of that.
Well, two of my favorite signees, two of my favorite recruits were Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I had the privilege of calling three WrestleMania main events featuring those two lads. And Austin won the first two, The Rock won the last one, and the last one, which was a secret, as far as Steve retiring, he didn't want anybody to know that was his last match. So only two or three of us knew that. And it was very difficult, very challenging to see him end his career that way, this way he wanted to go out. He's John Wayne. But all those three main events of WrestleMania were those two guys that I had such high hopes for, and it became such a part of their life and their mind, probably was going to hang up there at the top of the list. And then at WrestleMania 18 in Toronto, where, we have The Rock fighting Hulk Hogan, we're thinking the Hogan's the villain because of the NWO and all that villain stuff. And they comes out. It's like the Eagles getting back together. The crowd went crazy, and they loved it. It was absolutely amazing. So Lawler and I, who were doing the commentary, kind of had to change our MO a little bit because we couldn't make Hogan the villain in our commentary when the crowd was going just adoring him. But they weren't really booing The Rock on occasion, but not bad. They still loved The Rock. But that was probably the most unique match I called on that high level. But the Rock Austin three-match series was probably my favorite of all time.
JR, before I let you go, you know, it changed so much. When I was a kid, it was so simple. It went, you know, black and white, good versus bad. Then things got much grayer, and it seemed like the wrestling fan became so much more sophisticated. How did you see that evolve?
Social media is the answer to all that stuff. The information flow is more prominent. There's more information out there behind the scenes stuff on social media and all these different websites that do nothing but cover pro wrestling 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But the social media component is what really changed a lot of things. And of course, McMahon wants to be Walt Disney. You know, he's a little Walt Disney-esque. He wants the entertainment side. He wants to bring smiles to everybody's faces. And so I think sometimes that process has been overthought a little bit. I think still fans enjoy seeing athleticism and compelling storylines, good versus evil, just like you said. And that's why when you have a game in New York, there's a home team and there's a visitor. The visitors are the heels, except their little covey of fans that travel. And the home team are the baby faces. They're the heroes of wrestling. It's the same. It's just, that's just life. So I'm thinking that social media was a big difference maker, and the fans speak their mind too. You get great feedback instantly. You know, I do a show on if I got the courage, I'll do a show on Wednesday night live. Soon after that's over, I'll look on my phone and follow what's going on Twitter and see if they hated me or they loved me that night or they like what we did or whatever. You get instant feedback, and some of it's very, very good. Fans are smart. They're not all toothless and you know, uneducated. There's a smart group of fans out there. So it's just the social media is a big difference.
Under the Black Hat, my life of the WWE and beyond, JR, you're the best. It's great to hear your voice, and thanks so much for the time.
Well, Chris, we're going to be coming your way one of these days. We got a big event scheduled for Jersey, Newark. We're coming to the Northeast. It's just a matter of when this virus is going to allow us to travel. And in the meantime, if people visit my website, jrsbbq.com, I'll sell you a personalized autograph book and some barbecue sauce. Can't beat it, buddy.
Get the sauce. You brought it. First time we met in person, JR, was in Philly a few years back, and you brought that sauce. And let me tell you something. It hit the spot, and it was a hit for the next 3 weeks. It was phenomenal. JR's barbecue sauce. Love it.
Well, I appreciate that. I remember that was a cool sports bar there in Philly we went to. I like
Chickies and Pete's. Yeah.
Chickies and Pete's. So, hey, look, when we come to the Northeast and it's going to happen, I'll make sure and get a hold of you and get you some tickets.
Please do. Please do, JR. Thanks so much.
You bet, buddy.
Absolutely. Jim Ross, the legendary announcer for wrestling. And if you're like me and you're just a huge fan, that voice is just iconic.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.